Bonjour mesdames et messieurs, bienvenue à notre conférence de presse.
Good morning ladies and gentlemen and welcome to our Paris press conference. I'm going to give you a few practical details before we get started. The conference will be in English, but you can also follow it in English via those headsets. Now, for those of you that are following the press conference via video webcast, you can also ask your questions by email, and we'll try to answer them. If we don't, we'll give you a written answer later on. If you would like to talk to one or other of the executives, then please don't hesitate to contact Chris Hogg at the back of the room. And also, you're invited to a cocktail reception after this press conference. Mr. Book, you have the floor.
Mesdames et messieurs, bienvenue à notre conférence.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this press conference and welcome also to all of you following this conference remotely via the webcast. And I want to thank you for your interest in by your presence and your presence on the webcast, your interest in our company. It's a pleasure to be here in Paris for another press conference to talk about the first three quarters of 2011. And I want to take this opportunity, given that we're here in Paris, to congratulate the First Lady and the President of the Republic on the birth of their daughter. The French population has rejuvenated itself, and one future consumer is born. So once again, congratulations. Last year, we were in New York for this conference, this Q3 conference, and it's the first time for quite a while that we've left our usual location. We started, left Vivi, and we hit the United States because it's the biggest market in the world. That was a market where we were able to show the different divisions, how Nestlé's strategy transforms into reality in a specific market. And so today we're here in France. Why France? France is our second biggest market, a very important market for us. It's a market where, in fact, indeed, it was the first market that we established since the beginning of our company 145 years ago, the very first market where we established ourselves internationally. So we're in France. Nestlé has been in France since 1868 with a range of products that really represents what we are. It's a vast range of products, very complementary, a lot of categories of products. And it's also a market and a country where we can showcase and demonstrate the execution and realization of a very important dimension, all the more so given the current economic situation around the world, which is linked to innovation, because this market here is a very innovative market. But allow me, first of all, to present my colleagues, Jim Singh. The Chief Financial Officer is here up on stage with me, Laurent Freixe for Europe. Robin Tickle, Head of Media Relations, is here. In the room, too, we have, and possibly to answer some of your questions, we have John Harris, Head of Nestlé Waters Worldwide. There's also Richard Girardot, Head of Nespresso. There's Marshall Rowland, too. He's the CEO of Nestlé France. There's Dennis Kahns, Head of Nestlé Waters France. Sophie Dubois is here, too. She's the president of Nestlé Purina France and Belgium. And Bert De Meyer, he's the CEO of Infant Nutrition here in France. Herman Vils is in the room, too. He's in charge of accounts worldwide. And Jacques Bourdevin, he's in charge of finance, Nestlé France. So you have seen, and you are now aware of our sales revenues this morning. Jim will be talking about that in more detail later on. But allow me, first of all, to briefly comment on these figures, because it's a difficult environment, as everybody well knows. We've continued to build the capacity and our positions for the future in the markets. And all that whilst maintaining strong growth, vigorous growth, healthy growth in all regions and all categories around the world. And it's that constant renovation and renewal, that creativity that we put into our portfolio of products. And that, associated with innovation, daring innovation, pioneer innovation, which has made us, again, gain numerous positions and market share. It's that high level of innovation that we achieve, which requires a massive investment and a lot of support from marketing, communication, that's directly linked with the consumer, because it's that winning combination that is at the basis of our growth. And for that, and for the full year, we've put in our press release that in spite of raw materials costs and the financial markets, we hope to be slightly outperform our organic target growth. And we continue to aim to improve our margins at constant currency rates. But let's take a quick look at the environment and the basic reasons for this growth. These results, we delivered them in a very difficult context. As you can see, the headlines of the press is that this is the worst crisis we've ever seen. No more growth, slumps. It's all gloom and doom. And this context is characterized by a monetary crisis and an economic crisis that's very harsh here in Europe, but not just in Europe. It's political instability and economic instability around the world, loss of consumer confidence that's tied into all this, in particular in the developed markets. It's the cost of raw materials and foodstuffs and the parity of the Swiss franc for us at Nestle. In other words, it's an environment that's full of problems. But naturally, it's also an environment that's full of opportunities. And it's up to us, Nestle too, us, to seize these opportunities and to see how we can rewire this capacity we have for creativity and turn that into products that the consumers want, products that retailers want. And that, in a developing market, in developed and developing and emerging markets, Europe and around the world. What's the main driver then? Well, I've already mentioned it. It's innovation. It's that creativity that's linked with innovation that manifests itself as new products, services, systems, but also the creativity that we put into rewiring reality, to review, to overhaul the way that we work, overhaul the business models, and seek out new creative ways and innovative ways of intrinsically linking the customer with our products. And France is an excellent example. In spite of the confidence of consumers that's quite low at the moment, a lot of competition with a lot of players in our industry that are very active, there's a very intense competition there. Well, nonetheless, in France, we've had excellent growth with sales revenues that demonstrate a real freshness. It's reflected in our market share, too, which is growing. And Laurent Freixe, he'll go into the detail to comment on that and to show you how innovation is at the root of this growth here in France, but also in the whole of Europe. Now, I'm going to give the floor to Jim to present the group figures, and then I'll come back to talk about other things myself. Jim, you have the floor.
Okay. Merci, Paul. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. I will make my presentation in English. I would like to start my presentation by highlighting our performance, the key elements of our performance year-to-date September. During the first 9 months of the year, we have maintained a solid growth momentum as we continue to invest in the growth platforms of our company. In particular, in particular, our innovations continue to provide for sustainable growth, especially against our billionaire brands, which continue to grow faster than the average of the company. Today, our growth is exceeding the composite of all the categories in which we participate, and more than 60% of our brands around the world are holding or gaining market shares. We are making good progress in a very, very difficult economic environment, and even in the most difficult of markets, we demonstrate good progress. On the basis of our performance trends so far this year, we believe that the organic growth for 2011 will be slightly over our long-term range of 5 to 6%, while we strive to improve our margin in constant currency. The key elements of our performance year to date are as follows. Real internal growth of 4.1%, a price growth of 3.2%, which together gives 7.3% organic growth. Acquisitions and divestiture remain negative at 5.7%, primarily due to the divestiture of Alcon, and we'll come back to this. Foreign exchange continued to extol a significant negative impact on our performance, which year to date September was negative 15.1%. Here on this chart is the evidence of the solidity of our growth performance consistently over the last quarters. And here is just an evidence of the last seven quarters. And I would define this chart as a picture of growth, of sustainable growth at a very high level. On a global basis, and taking all the businesses in the respective regions, we are demonstrating growth everywhere. In Europe, our business is growing at 5% organic growth, real internal growth of 3.5%. In the Americas, we're now up to 5.8% organic growth, with real internal growth at 1.7%, and in AOA at 13.1% organic growth, with real internal growth close to 10%. Our growth is indeed widespread, without exception. In the developed world, we are growing at 4%, including pigs, where we continue to grow at nearly 4%. The emerging markets remain at an appreciable double-digit growth, and BRICS within it at nearly 12%, slightly over 12%. PPP, which is our emerging consumers business on a global basis, is growing at nearly 13%. Now, on M&A activity, as I said before, the net negative impact on M&A was 5.7%. which reflects the significant impact of the divestiture of Alcon in August of 2010. If you exclude the Alcon divestiture, M&A is contributing 1.1% growth so far this year. On this chart is just an example of those transactions that we have announced, some of which are completed so far this year. If we are able to complete these transactions, the cost this year in terms of M&A will be about 4.5 billion Swiss francs. I just want to spend a couple of minutes on currency because the translation effect for the first 9 months was 15.1% negative. And if you look at the currency, all the major currencies around the world are contributing to this negative impact. The US dollar, for example, is down 18% from where the average was this year last time. The euro, minus 12%, sterling, minus 13%, Brazilian real, minus 10%, and the Mexican pesos at minus 13, and the yen, even the yen at minus 8. So all the major currencies have weakened considerably against the Swiss franc on an average so far this year. And therefore, This currency weakness is having a very significant adverse effect on the various business units. Nestle Waters, we have John here in the room this morning, nearly 17% negative impact on the Nestle Waters sales on a global basis. In Zone Americas, nearly 17%. In nutrition, 16%. AOA, 15%. And you could go zone by zone. In Zone Europe, 12%. So these are significant negative impacts on our business, and therefore our progress has to reflect the impact of the weakness of the currencies against of the world against the Swiss franc in our business. Additionally, we are following very closely the weakening of some key currencies against the U.S. dollar, because this is going to have an impact on the delivered cost of products that are traded in U.S. dollars in our various markets around the world. So there are two effects. One is the translation effects, which are the weakness or strength against the Swiss franc. And then there's a transaction impact on the weakening of local market currencies against the U.S. dollar, because, as you know, most of our inputs are traded in U.S. dollars. Here is also, on this chart, you could see the widespread growth of our business. All zones, all globally managed business, continue to deliver growth upon growth. This is this year growth. And if you go back last year, you'll see a similar picture. Now, I want to start an examination of the zones, starting with Americas, which is our largest zone, with sales of 19 billion Swiss francs, organic growth of 5.6%, and RIG of 0.8%. And here is the story of the North and the South. In North America, the consumer confidence remain very subdued in a very difficult environment. Most of our categories there are in decline. However, we are seeing some very positive performances by our businesses. Pet care, for example, has shown some good recovery in the last 3 or 4 months, gaining market shares. Ice cream is growing marginally. Pizza growth is very positive. And our entry, Coffee Mate's entry into the dairy creamer segment, is quite successful. On the other hand, however, the frozen prepared meals category remains soft, and our business is experiencing some difficulty. We have launched some innovations to stimulate growth in the category, and we look forward to achieve some success with those initiatives. In the South, Latin America continues to deliver mid-teens growth. And this experience is in all the major Latin American markets on the strength of our major brands in the region. In Europe, a very difficult economic environment, 11.1 billion sales, 3.8% organic growth, and 2.2% RIG. And my colleague, Lauren Frex, will provide you more information, so I'd leave the comments on Zone Europe to Lauren, and he will clearly explain to you why and how we are winning in Europe. On Zone Asia, Oceania, and Africa, there again, sales of 11.1 billion Swiss francs, and the zone continued to deliver double-digit organic growth with real internal growth of 8% plus. The developed markets of Japan and Australia continue to deliver low single-digit growth, which is excellent, especially considering the difficulties in that part of the world. But importantly, the emerging markets continue to deliver mid-teen growth. And all the major markets in Asia are growing, some of them more than 20%. Nestle Nutrition continues to do well, 5.4 billion Swiss francs for the first 9 months of the year, organic growth of nearly 8%. 80% of the business in this division is represented by our infant nutrition business, and within that, infant formula. The total subsegment is growing close to double digit. Infant formula is benefiting from some very meaningful innovations focusing on probiotics and colic relief, and it in itself is delivering double-digit growth. Jenny Craig remains weak, reflecting the poor economic environment in the U.S., and our small performance nutrition is at low single digit and is recovering. Now, Nestle Waters, 5.1 billion Swiss francs, nearly 5% organic growth, but more importantly, 3.2% real internal growth. Increased pricing in the U.S. at retail have restrained organic growth in the first 9 months. However, the organic growth for the first 9 months remain in positive territory. In Europe, progress was hampered by very bad weather in the third quarter. When you take the 9 months put together, we are in positive growth territory. The international brands, Perrier, San Pellegrino, Panna, Vittel, are growing at close to double-digit and gaining shares on a global basis. The emerging markets business in Nestle Waters now represent about 16% of the total business, and these businesses are growing in the high teens. When you look at the other businesses, which we call the other categories with sales of 9.1 billion Swiss francs for the first 9 months, organic growth double-digit, and real internal growth nearly 9%. Nestle Professional is growing faster than the industry segment, and as you know, this segment is under considerable stress. Beverages are growing at double-digit, and our food business in mid-single-digit. Nespresso continues its journey in terms of growth at or above 20%, slightly above 20%, behind some solid innovations on capsules and systems, and deepening our distribution. We believe by the end of this year, we will have 250 boutiques around the world. Health sciences continue to grow, high single-digit growth, and making very good progress. There's good progress in building the organization capability and integrating recent acquisitions. Mid-single-digit growth. In conclusion, organic growth of 7.3% is a solid and broad-based performance. As the year progresses, we believe that price growth will play a more important role in the organic growth composition. The economic environment remains challenging, especially in the developed world where we don't see any near-term relief. With respect to the guidance this year, we expect to slightly overperform our 5-6% organic growth range while we strive to achieve margin improvement in constant currency. Thank you. Paul.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. We are here in Paris, in France, in Europe, and this is an excellent opportunity to put the accent on our performance and on the drivers behind this European growth. Because in a tough context, a demanding context, we are making rapid progress with organic growth of 5% in the first 9 months of this year. And this growth is fueled essentially by volumes for 70%, and the rest comes from prices. We are driving the growth in our categories. We're winning market share across the world and in two-thirds of our business units. Now, our growth model rests not only on operational excellence, but also on the generation of efficiency. Generating efficiency and driving efficiencies means we can invest in our growth initiatives and, in particular, in innovation. Our innovation programs rolled out with our partners and our commercial partners enables us to develop market share And thanks to that gain in market share, well, that generates profitable growth and contributes to the Nestlé growth model. Innovation, as you've understood, is at the heart of our strategy. Innovation, real innovation, and I'm talking about innovation that creates a breakthrough where there's a before and an after, that type of innovation. Well, I've got multiple examples. Amongst the most spectacular, naturally, is Nestlé transforming the market for tea with specialty, Baby Ness. With Baby Ness, we're innovating here in infant nutrition. And in the field of coffee, be it at home or outdoors, we're transforming coffee drinking with a unique experience that redefines excellence in terms of quality and service. Now, in the single-dose coffee systems market, there's a lot of interest, a lot of attention. It's generating a lot of growth. Well, this market that Nestlé created with Nespresso about 30 years ago, well, in this market, which has become so competitive, there's practically 50 players in that market today in coffee systems. Well, Nestlé is globally winning with more than 40% of market share and with very substantial gains thanks to Nespresso and thanks to Nescafé Dolce Gusto. Nespresso remains the ultimate benchmark. And Nespresso reinvents itself continuously and permanently via new types of coffees with exceptional taste characteristics and via new machines, higher performance machines like the Pixie here. But Nestlé also innovates via the services it offers. And to give you an example, Nespresso Your Time, well, that enables you in Paris to receive your doses of Nespresso in 2 hours after you order them on the internet. Now, the other pillar of our growth is Nescafé Dolce Gusto, which offers you a coffee shop at home. And with Nescafé Dolce Gusto, the success is continuing and growing fast. In 2 years, Dolce Gusto will be a billionaire brand. Today, it's available in 41 countries in Europe. That's practically the whole of the European continent. And it's making progress of more than 50%. And today is the leader in 20 countries. This spectacular progress and growth rests once again on a design and on a cutting-edge technology and an offering of unique products, from espresso to cappuccino, chocolates, iced tea, cold tea, Nest tea, and the valorization at the point of sale, which is totally spectacular, this merchandising. Now, innovation is also in other categories too. And to give you an example here, cooking, where we can say that Maggi has reinvented cooking with this concept of juicy cooking, which today is available in 34 European countries. It's called Papillote here in France. It's called So Juicy in the UK. And it's called Directo al Horno in Spain. We've been growing. We've got more than 50% growth and should be hitting 135 million Swiss francs of sales in Europe with this concept. Success is unanimous in all countries where this concept has been rolled out, including in the countries where we didn't have or had a very little presence in cooking, in the like the UK and Scandinavia, for example. Now, this success, we're driving this once again via new concepts of oven cooking and pan cooking. Innovation goes even beyond the products. It's in the way that we work with our customers, consumers, And so we've created 7 shopping centers, shopper centers, which are R&D centers, where we develop new strategies and winning category strategies. We've got one spectacular one in Noisiel, close to Paris, and I do invite you to come and visit our R&D center in Noisiel, near Paris. It's very impressive. Now, but innovation goes even further, and it's my great pleasure today to present our latest initiative, which is called Maison Cahier, which is going to be transforming great chocolate by making made-to-measure chocolates, chocolates personalized to your taste. Maison Cahier rests on their unique skills, expertise, and know-how. They have a long tradition of being artisan chocolate makers. Maison Cahier seeks out the best ingredients, cocoas from Ecuador, selected in 5 different plantations. It's also milk coming from the Gruyère region in Switzerland, very well known for its high quality. This research for excellence has finally manifested itself in a personalized offering, personalized to your taste, thanks to a unique profiling system that determines what is your chocolate personality. Launched in 2012 in Switzerland, Maison Cahier will be offering 20 great chocolates designed and conceived by our artisan chocolate makers, and you order it on the Maison Cahier website and be delivered at home in 48 hours. But better than a long explanation, you can actually taste them. Taste this new offering, which is once again the product of a long tradition of updating products to the taste, the current taste, today's taste, in the digital era where we personalize everything. Now, for the future, we've got products and systems to serve a standardized offering or a more personalized offering, but we'll continue to explore as much as possible the possibilities and to push back the limits of innovation to deliver bigger benefits to our consumers and customers and to continue to drive that growth here in Europe. And I would like to thank you for your attention. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, thank you, Laurent. That's what Nestlé is all about. It's creativity, originality, it's renovation, time and time again, throughout the whole structure and everywhere in the world. You saw a few examples here in France, in Europe in general, and it happens time and time again. We see it all over the world. And it is indeed these initiatives and this strategy, this local strategy, which is a part of a global strategy, which is to be the first company worldwide, the biggest in nutrition, health and well-being and wellness. We've built this strategy into our roadmap that we've shared with you many a time, which clearly defines what we want to be in the beginning. You know, what is our mission, our vision? What's the strategic direction that this company is taking, first and foremost? It defines also the competitive advantages that we want to build and strengthen, once again, to get market success. It defines the axes, the growth platforms that we're going to be defining and on which we'll be building our growth. We call these the growth drivers in the group. It also defines how we're going to do that efficiently, how we're going to do it with optimum results, how we're going to do it at the lowest cost. And we call these our operational pillars. That roadmap has given us and continues permanently to give us an alignment in a company which, by definition, given that we're in nutrition, we're in beverages, food and beverages are local, of course. We have to be decentralized because tastes vary so much around the world. Yet we managed to align the company on those fundamental goals and objectives, which keeps us close to the final consumer. The compromise, a promise, is nutrition, healthy nutrition. We've defined healthy nutrition via three dimensions. The first is pleasure. The second is that it has to be balanced with choice. And the third one is comprehension. You've got to understand what you're eating. So pleasure, first of all. We're convinced that food, which has no taste, that you don't like, will never be a part of anybody's diet. People like to eat well and taste what they're eating. So good taste is the first thing. In a company, that's what we have to do, is ally good taste with the nutritional dimension. Second, a varied offering. People don't want to eat one single product. They want a varied diet. And that's why Nestlé is, first of all, in several categories. That creates a certain complexity. That's our problem. We have to manage that, tie all that complexity together with a bit of efficacy. But it also enables us to have a much broader R&D base that can inspire several categories with the same kind of know-how and the same types of nutritional science. That's equilibrium and choice. That's pillar number two for healthy nutrition. Number three, understanding, comprehension. Comprehension of a company and scientific studies, which has an R&D system that's well-established and vast. We as a company have to know and understand. But the consumer, too, has to know and understand. And that's a job of education and communication of a consumer who knows how to make the right decision in full awareness. And there we've got a lot of work to do. We're convinced that those three dimensions are the ones that we have to rest on as a company and work on as a company. It's those three dimensions that will link us to the customer. And I think that Nestlé has some unique strengths in this field. We can be in several categories, and we can accompany somebody from the from A to Z, from the cradle to the grave. It's a unique position that enables Nestlé to invest in this know-how, in research and in development. That's what we're looking for. It's how to improve the quality of life of people. That's our promise via food and beverages, choice in food and beverages that are healthier and tastier for all the stages in life and at any time of the day, whilst helping the consumers to care for themselves and their families. And that too is why we have we say good food, good life. Those are the four words that say it all, that cover that promise, good food, good life. And I've seen that in several actions. Here's just a few, for example. We're investing permanently and continuously in our products. Every one of our categories of products has its own communication messages to make it a leader in nutrition in its domain. We have a system, we have a way of doing this, of optimizing nutrition and health and wellness, and we call it the 60-40 plus. It's a nice short concept which covers a kind of a workload that really involves everybody in Nestlé. First of all, the preference has got to be the taste. So all the R&D systems focus first off on taste. How to combine textures and the recipes of products for taste. And then the 60-40, well, the plus is the nutritional benefits that we deliver behind that. Once again, by reducing salt, fats, sugars, and by adding much more healthy nutrients. That's what we did last year. We revisited 6,000 categories of products around the world, because we want to review all of our products every 5 to 6 years to check them, to challenge them with this new nutritional framework. Once again, so that we go in the right direction of healthy eating in France in the last 10 years, we revisited more than 80% of the portfolio of products and along those criteria. This in-depth work, well, if our product offering isn't sufficient, well, then we still need to support the consumer and tell them how to make the right usage of our products. That's communication, transparent and clear nutritional information, clear labeling via all of the channels, via the websites, hotlines, etc. And, for example, it's also that reason that in 97 we came up with a nutritional compass, which is a way of labeling our products that transmits that information, but it also invites inform themselves more. All of our communication, be it classic media, TV, radio, or print media, modern media like the internet, websites, or direct communication, is always based on a nutritional argument. But we even go further still. We work with public health bodies, NGOs, and government bodies to promote healthier diets and nutritional education. For me, nutritional education is one of the most important points because we're convinced that education is a powerful way of ensuring that children understand early in life the importance of nutrition and physical exercise for health throughout their entire life. And around the world, we launched the Nestlé Healthy Kids program. That's a program developed together with the government authorities and nutritional experts to really give, transmit this knowledge to future generations. That's why it's already rolled out in 50 countries. Here in France, for example, we work with EPOD. We've already been working with EPOD here in France for 20 years, which is to prevent obesity amongst children. That's a branch of the Ministry of Health and Sports. And that program has been integrated into the worldwide program on healthy kids by Nestlé. So it's in that sense, because this morning we saw the Minister for Health. We signed that charter, the voluntary charter, to make nutritional progress, especially in infant nutrition, because we're the only company that's had that privilege, given the efforts that we've made and that we are continuing to make. And it shows the commitment of Nestlé to take this dimension seriously. Nutrition is serious, and it starts with kids. A healthy society is a productive society, and it's also a society which is very positive. We have charters for four other products too, Maggi, Defgel, and it shows that Nestlé is committing itself in all ranges of products in that direction. Furthermore, here in France, we have the Nestlé Foundation here in France, which does nutritional behavioral studies and promotes positive behavior and transmits best practices, once again, in a fight against obesity. It's a problem that's very visible in the world, in the whole world, not just in the developed world. We do that as a company, but we also do it because we're heavily involved industrially in our alliance with companies linked to nutrition and the Consumer Goods Forum as well, which is here in Paris. That's a worldwide organization based in Paris, which brings together companies, industrial manufacturers, retailers, and suppliers of raw materials to come together and commit themselves in this direction of efficacy, but especially nutrition in general. Now, talk about nutrition. Well, indeed, this is the visible driver, let's say, what we communicate on. What's behind is not so visible. Well, that's R&D. And once again, it's everything that we do and say is founded on cutting-edge science, focused on the consumer's needs, on the consumer themselves, and to differentiate ourselves from our competitors. And the new products, the new technologies and new manufacturing processes for health, food and health and safety, and our R&D involves more than 5,000 people, two directly at Nestlé. But we've got practically the same number outside the company that we're working with in partnerships, two R&D centers in Lausanne and 29 R&D centers around the world specialized on categories and techniques. And that's what I think is very important, too. That's what plays a vital role, is that we've got 300 of these application groups. These are people in the factories who convert that science, that know-how, into production techniques and real, tangible products locally, because food is, after all, local, taste is local, and it's these application groups that play a vital role in making everything that we do in the laboratories and scientifically into real products on the shelves and on people's plates and production systems. We invest in this network of R&D around the world, and just this last year, we've created an R&D center in Peking with a new R&D center in Switzerland also. That was opened about a year and a half ago in Santiago in Chile, and another one in Abidjan in Africa, to really tie together all that know-how with a whole continent that has real specific nutritional challenges.
And we're also currently building for next year, to open it next year, a research center in India that will focus on what we call emerging consumers with their specific nutritional needs. Here in France, we have 5 research centers. We have the Tool Research Center that is focusing on plants. And this is with this research center that we are working on our Nescafe plant and our cocoa plants. It is with this R&D center that we can talk to our suppliers to help them improve their productivity. And we also have the Beauvais Research Center on ice creams. We have the Lisieux Research Center. We have the one in Vittel for water. And also an R&D center for pet products. So France is really important to us in this innovation R&D approach, and this is complemented at the world level. This national and international network give us a unique possibility in scientific possibilities in nutrition, beverages, and food farming and plant knowledge. The sharing of our knowledge helps us improve on our products and speed up innovation and product launches. Another important innovation is that a year ago we invented, we announced the invention of Nestlé Health Science with our Institute for Health and Science. It's something that is totally new. It's a new segment that being established. It is currently being defined. And this is being done on the basis of new scientific information. It's in between food and pharmacy. And Nestlé Health Science became operational in January of this year, 2011. And we've incorporated business healthcare nutrition. That was 1.5 billion of Swiss francs. So we've first organized the absorption of Nestlé Healthcare, but we've also defined the strategic orientation of this new business with the definition of growth platforms, whether for geriatrics, gastrointestinal, metabolism, or brain health. We've also made a number of strategic acquisitions to give us a few growth capabilities. Since we're talking about a tailor-made solution based on food and depending on the medical condition, so we have Vitaflow, Semen de Pharma, We also have an American company specialized on the gastrointestinal diagnosis and also Vita Food, which allow us to set up scientific and commercial platforms for the future. We also currently setting up our Institute of Health Sciences in the Lausanne campus. It's already operational, and in the next years, it is going to bring us answers based on multidisciplinary science and all this on nutrition. So our strategy of nutritional health and wellness is extended throughout the world to all our business sectors, and it is made practical into our products. This is something that we are trying to accelerate, and I think this link between research and development, long-term, combined with innovation, with these three dimensions I mentioned, pleasure, taste, the choice, offering a diversity of products, and also understanding, create a winning triangle. And Nestlé has a unique position in here. We are aware of it, and we want to keep feeding it for the future. And this is what we're doing in France. The 17,000 employees here, with those are our brands here in France, our products here in France, and it's obvious that this innovation gives us good growth in a difficult environment, and it is a highly motivating growth. And the same goes on in the other countries. Innovation creates growth platforms, and it's the 280,000 employees of Nestlé who are performing this strongly. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your attention, and we are now here to take your questions. Thank you. Thank you very much. We will be able to take your questions now. You just have to give your name and speak into the microphone and say which media you come from. Rudolf Meyer from Radio Suisse. I would like to know what is Nestlé's strategy with regard to the L'Oréal Group, and will the situation of Liliane Bettencourt change anything in the implementation of this strategy? This question doesn't come as a surprise. I'm just surprised that it's the first question that comes up. I have to say that legal decisions, French legal decisions regarding the Bettencourt family that were handed out at the beginning of the week or last week, do not change the conditions. Are the agreement between L'Oréal and Nestlé and with the Bettencourt family? That being said, when I say it does not impact, you are aware of our relationship with L'Oréal and with the family. It's all public. We always meet our obligations. And this helps us be able to define in due time, in 2014, the decisions we have to make. This decision in itself is a decision.
Leo Klim, du Financial Times.
Leo Klim from Financial Times, Germany. Just to come back to this issue of L'Oréal, are you thinking of not keeping your commitment? Could you please repeat your question? I was just asking a follow-up question. Are you considering not keeping your involvement in L'Oréal? are we considering not, well, leaving the capital of L'Oréal? I just answered this. There's no change in our commitment to L'Oréal. So this was just to follow up on this, but I have another question on your target of 45% for emerging countries by 2020. When you compare yourself to the other major competitors of your field, of your industry, don't you feel it may be not ambitious enough? First of all, ambition is linked to growth in all countries. I think that we already have almost 40% of our sales in there. What we said that we wanted that in the 10 years to come, we should increase this by 10 points because of the dynamics of these countries. This is what we are considering. You've seen our sales, our growth. We're on our, well on our way to doing this. And it's quite logical because emerging countries are in a different situation of growth. 80% of the population in these countries are working for better tomorrows, and we're part of this. Our involvement in emerging countries goes back a long time. Our presence and our sales in these emerging countries are more than twofold that of our competitors. In terms of percentage, it may look less because we are big and we also have good growth in developed countries. So I think you're talking about the mix. I'm talking about the capacity of achievement in these markets, and I think they are major.
Oui, Monsieur Le Tessier, là-bas. Le...
Bonjour.
Excusez-moi, pardon.
Bonjour.
Good morning, my Kira Mitrofanov from the Challenge magazine. And I would like to know, I think you are probably aware of a tax on soft drinks in France. In Denmark, we've also heard of a new tax on fat products. There's the same kind of approach in the U.S. So we see that governments of developed states, but not only, are looking into increasing the VAT taxing products, including in France, for the next step. So how does Nestlé approach this project, apart from the efforts that you've mentioned with the less salt, less fat, if the VAT rate increased on chocolate, for instance? I have to say that nutrition is, first of all, something very serious. And personally, I wonder the taxation of what you are mentioning. What is the motivation for this? Is it about money or is it to make the population healthier? It's clear that what is stated is one thing, but I'm rather convinced that they need money. You know the situation in Europe, and you know there's quite a lot of creativity, politically speaking. I think it's food is something very serious, and it's not because you're going to add a tax to make nutrition more expensive that it's going to change things. Our commitment is to do this seriously, is to reduce these aspects in our products with our capabilities, with science, to make the products more balanced. I said that taste is important. There are ways of showing the taste without salt, without things, and that's our commitment to child nutrition. In child products, we are looking into reducing salt because taste or perception comes from education. And if you educate children with the need for salt in order to find the taste, you are conditioning them. There are things to be done here, and that's what we're doing. And I think that's we in the industry can work, and that's the commitment we've made at Nestlé. But we are working in the same situation of taxes and so on. We can talk, we can make commitments in our talks with the governments in order to bring this serious approach of nutrition, education, research and development that we invest in for to include into our products. Those are long-term dimensions, and we believe more in this than in taxing products. I don't believe that there can be a direct impact of a tax on anything, that people are all of a sudden going to decide that it's too expensive. I think it's better to commit ourselves more in depth, and we're doing this with the authorities as well. And I've shown you these aspects with the health ministry, for instance, in France, the commitments we're making, and this is something that's done in other countries as well. Yvan Le Tessier from Le Figaro. I would like to make sure I understood your question. At Nestlé, Nestlé has the possibility of disposing of its investment in L'Oréal. When you talked about 2014, should I understand that between now and 2014, Nestlé will not reduce its investment into L'Oréal? And secondly, can you give us more precise figures on the evolution of the sales of Nestlé in 2010 compared to 2009 and since the beginning of 2011. And it was also announced that the Maggi frozen foods would be stopped. Will there be other changes in the scope of Nestlé in the coming month? Where in France, L'Oréal keeps coming up. What I said is that until 2014, you know what the conditions are. Until 2014, we don't need to make a decision. So the decision is a status quo. We need to wait. We're waiting. That's a decision in itself. What is done in France, I think that Laurent can give us more details, but in France, we have a growth in volumes and in value. In volumes, because we are taking market share in a depressed market. For value, it's mostly because we have added value products. Indeed, for France, and I think we've explained it quite clearly today, France is a growth driver for Europe. So the growth of Europe in France was higher than the European average. And quite clearly, innovation contributed to the innovation in a remarkable way, in a spectacular way. Nestlé France was actually the company that contributed the most to the growth of the consumer products sector in 2010. So there's an impact for us, but further than us, for all categories. Regarding the pyramid or frozen foods, we've decided to focus on a few product lines for which we think there's potential and for which we think we have specific know-how, and especially pizzas. Pizzas are for us a fundamental growth possibility. We have a plant in northern France that focused on pizzas, and there's also spectacular growth. And this is very important for our growth in France and in Europe. So we are rather looking at investing than restructuring. That's our approach.
Yeah. Hello, Daniela Fernandez da Costa from Valor Econômico Brazil. I have two questions. My first one concerns Brazil. Could you give us some indicators concerning your sales revenues in Brazil, at least compare that to other emerging countries anyway, and also comment on your current projects for Brazil? Is there going to be new investment, CapEx, or production sites? In terms of external growth. Second question is, how is Nestlé going to counter this deceleration in the world economy? Your PPPs, are they going to be broadened out, especially in the rich countries? And in Brazil, what's going to be happening there with PPP, with your PPP products, which apparently are very successful? Thank you. Bom dia, says Mr. Book. Well, thank you for that question, because Brazil is one of those countries where we're very present and have been for many years.
there's a lot of characteristics of France in Brazil in terms of Nestlé's presence and the size of our commitment and our long-term commitment. And so I'm using your question to talk about the concept, because we've been in Brazil for 90 years now, and you're saying, what's the plan? What's the game plan? Well, Brazil has been a source of growth for the group. It's one of the biggest markets for us today. And we are present in many categories of products. That's dairy, coffee, cereals, chocolate, very important too in Brazil. We have a very broad and deep presence, and we're really a part of the landscape. We're a part of the family life in Brazil, in fact. It's a country where, and this is the second part of your question, where our PPP, our popularly positioned products, well, that's Brazil is a good example of that, of PPP, because we've invested a lot there. You're talking about CapEx and investment. Well, we built a factory in Feira Santa in Bahia. That's specialized, very special factory, because it's deliberately a multi-category factory to serve the 60 million consumers in Bahia in the north of Brazil. And that really enables us to build the whole marketing mix there and the marketing tools around this new emerging consumer. We've invested in extrusion with, we have 10, oh yeah, 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 a panel of shoppers as well. So there's a whole range of experiences that we've come out of Brazil that we're using around the whole world now that helps us to tie ourselves to the consumer and to get into the lives of emerging consumers. And you also talked about PPPs in developed countries. Well, that's clear because 15% of the population, be it here in France, etc., we can almost consider them as emerging. And it's clear that these people have another way of buying and consuming. We see it in different ways. In the United States, for example, it's not an emerging dimension per se, but the Hispanic population, for example, that's 50 million in the USA, who have a different perception of life and food. So we're always targeting our marketing instruments around these different opportunities of specifically defining the products, the distribution, the communication. And we're doing the same thing here in France. In France, an important part is halal food now. And in Europe in general, it's a very important dimension, halal food. And it's to seize those opportunities or analyze them anyway, and then get ready to serve those consumers. That's why we make those links one by one. 1.2 billion times a day around the whole world. That's what we're interested in. That's what we are. And it's consumers. We want to keep them and make them loyal. And PPP enables us to do that. My ambition for PPPs is, and we can, you know, we can measure specific PPP projects here at Nestlé. Because those projects are now 12 to 13% of our sales revenues. And our ambition is that it should ultimately become 20% in a few years' time. But we're measuring all of these projects. Many other projects linked to those segments of the community, but we're closely monitoring those 13%. Tino Andreessen, Handelsblatt. My question is, how do you react to these poor exchange rates, these unfavorable exchange rates, the strong Swiss franc? The Swiss franc, yeah, the Swiss franc is always strong when other currencies are weak. The others are weak. It's not that the Swiss franc is strong. It affects us? Yes, indeed. And more of our ego, really, because we're making efforts, we've got growth, and suddenly when we translate it into Swiss francs, there's less of it. But it's still Swiss francs. Real money, let's say. Are there fixed costs linked to that proportion, given that we're so decentralized and we produce all over the world, 450 factories around the world, nutrition is local, we're local, we've organized ourselves worldwide. So there's a neutralization of that effect, but there is nonetheless movements. This minus 15 now when we consolidate it. Yes, it does affect us. But we have, given our presence around the whole world, we have a natural hedge. It's a bit cosmetic, really, this effect. But Jim is right here beside me to play with that, refine that strategy, work on that strategy, develop that strategy. And there's all those euro-dollar parity issues as well. But it's only a consolidation issue and not an operational issue. Hi, Marie-Josée Cougar, Les Echos. I've got two questions. I want to know if you intend to continue your share buyback program, which had lasted several years. Second question is Africa. What's the weighting of the group today in Africa? What are your projects in Africa and your targets in Africa? The share buyback program, maybe Jim. That's a decision that we take as time goes by. Let's say we haven't got a firm strategy on that. Jim?
As you know, we have completed the share buyback program we announced last year, which was 10 billion Swiss francs. I mean, we've finished that program. We spent about 5 billion Swiss francs this year. I think where we are as a company, and considering the environment, especially with respect to liquidity, we are focusing right now on investing in the business, supporting our brands, supporting our R&D structures and programs around the world, investing in capital, building capacities in different parts of the world. And for this year, we weighted towards the emerging markets and looking for bolt-on acquisitions to strengthen the growth platforms of the company. We have said that the share buyback is always optional. It is not part of our policy. With respect to dealing with our shareholders, our focus is maintaining a dividend, reasonably growth in our dividends, as a preference to our share buyback. So dividend is part of our policy, and we will continue to gradually improve our dividend payout year after year. We're not necessarily ruling out the share buyback program because, as you know, Nestle is a very cash-generative company, and over the years, it is not our intention to pile up a lot of cash on the balance sheet. So, but for now, we have decided not to have another program.
En ce qui concerne l'Afrique, deuxième partie de votre question.
Concerning Africa, Africa is very important. There's 1 billion consumers. The population is 1 billion in Africa, and we reckon it's going to double in a few years' time. So massive population growth going on in Africa. So for us, it's about 3 billion of sales revenues, and we are foreseeing growth. There is growth in Africa. We forget about that, but there is growth in Africa of 5 to 6 or 7% these last few years, for over the whole last decade. So it's silent growth, let's say, because we're a bit focused on other parts of the world. But it's 1 billion inhabitants who together have seen 5 or 6 or 7% of annual growth. Now the news can be misleading, for example, but there is a certain stability in Africa. There are very stable places like Ghana. Ghana, they've had 5 elections now, totally democratic elections. Other countries have this growing maturity in terms of their democratic status, which inspires governments, more stable governments. Just a few months ago, I was in Nigeria to open up a big food factory. And we opened up this factory in the RDC, Congo, and in Kenya, in that whole region in Africa. And in South Africa, of course, we're already have been there for a long time now. There are many dimensions to invest in Africa. That continent, given the potential and given the stability, the growing stability. Now, there's also another dimension, which is nutrition, after all. There are so many positive dimensions that mean when we look at health and well-being and wellness, with micronutrients that you can add into our food. That I think it's really in Africa. There's a perfect environment for Nestlé's strategy, which is at the heart of our strategy, to give nutritional choice to consumers and to the population, to combine that with PPPs. That combination is going to be a winning combination in Africa. We'll have very interesting growth and also create a shared value there in Africa. Paul Betts, Financial Times. If I may, I'll ask my question in English because it's more for Mr. Singh.
Since you put out your figures this morning, the financial community and the analysts seem to have been extremely excited by one single little word, which is the word strive. And they are questioning whether this means that there has been, you're less confident about meeting your targets, and it's going to be more of a struggle than you probably anticipated 6 months ago.
Yeah. Well, since we spoke to you, the world continues to evolve, especially in the emerging markets. But before I start to give you an answer to the question, I just want to clarify our commitment to the Nestlé model. We have not changed our commitment to the Nestlé model, and that includes also working very hard to deliver the Nestlé model again in 2011. But the developments in the world are not leading to improving the consumer confidence, especially in the developed markets, where, as I said earlier this morning, that the developments here are not pointing to any kind of relief in the short term. And therefore, we must be cognizant of these risks in the marketplace, and our people are. However, as I said, having said that, I think we need to include these, the recognition of the challenges we face in the marketplace today, in our communication. But it doesn't lessen our commitment to deliver the Nestlé model again this year.
It's actually proving that English is a very rich language, because one word makes quite apparently a difference, but our commitment to the Nestlé model, which is to deliver every year, consistently over time, long term, the model is there very clearly.
Nina, nous avons une question du webcast.
We have on Nespresso, on its performance, especially if Nestlé has experienced or foresees any slowdown as the consumer environment gets tougher, as well as the competitive environment. And then a second question came from 24 Heures in Switzerland. What are the first results of the launch of the baby Nest system?
Well, Esma,
I'll answer first on Nespresso. Nespresso has had very motivating growth. And it's clear that there's economic pressure in the environment. It's a product that, after all, is a little bit of a luxury, let's say, that one could do without. Yes, indeed, also there are more competitors. And there's a lot of noise around the competitors, especially because we've had these competitors for years and years around the world. There's 50 different coffee systems, multinational coffee systems in this category. We sometimes forget that. 50 systems in general competing. And so competition, we're very enthusiastic about competition. It's a driver for us. It keeps us on the tip of our toes. That's what motivates us and drives our creativity, in fact. There's a whole panoply of products. There's a whole environment there, competitively speaking. And every year, somebody arrives, somebody leaves the market. It's a whole competitive dynamics there, which gives us our own dynamism. Now, we've had growth, even here in France. France is the biggest market. Switzerland, too, is a big market. Now, given this interesting market that we have and active competitors, too, But we're addressing that because we're continuing to get very good growth, even here in France, in spite of all that intense competition, because it is a dynamic category per se. Now, we've got growth in other countries too, where we are present with Nespresso. But what's interesting is the fact that Nespresso is confirming itself or getting interested in several dimensions, like we're in Latin America now, North America. Nespresso's got growth that's very, very motivating there in North America, Asia too. Now, the economic situation, we sometimes say that's going to depress their product, which is perceived slightly as a bit of a luxury. But I would say exactly in this depressed environment, a little touch of luxury is well received. And I think that's why consumers continue to look for experiences like Nespresso. What's important, too, is to see that Nespresso and coffee and coffee doses, that's a world that fascinates us. There's Nescafe, that was the first one. Individual portions of coffee, it was the first one. You make your own coffee the way you like it with Nescafe. Then there's Nespresso. Now there's Nestlé Dolce Gusto, Nestlé Professional, with all those Viaggio systems, Milano, that give excellent coffee experiences through different channels and systems. And it's with those four major arguments that were present around in the coffee world, and which enables us to gain and continue gaining market share. It's in that context that we're competitive and creative. And there was a question on Baby Ness also, says Mr. Frex. The Swiss launch was a test market to test the interest in the concept and the attractiveness of the concept. What I can tell you is that the results do correspond with our expectations, and the consumer expectations are well satisfied, because 92% of the users would recommend it to their family or friends. Well, it's clear that Baby Ness is a concept that's very new. It's a deep concept. We don't want to launch it everywhere around the whole world. We want to nurture it. We started here in Switzerland, and we've got a response, an initial reaction that's very positive, and we think there's going to be a very good future for this concept too. Sabine de Langlade, Les Echos. And I have two questions. This morning you signed a charter on infant nutrition. Do you think that that's going to help you to get ahead of Danone in that field? Second question is maybe due to the subtleties of the English language, but I didn't really understand exactly whether you confirmed those organic growth targets and indeed raised them slightly. And also, what about your profitability? Well, first of all, the charter on a nutritional commitment in infant nutrition. Well, that's the fifth one. We've got other products too. And it's just recognition by government authorities of the efforts that we're making in that direction. And it's for us, it's just a commitment. Commitment to continue addressing those issues. And it confirms that relationship of confidence that we have with the government. We do what we do, and we do it with conviction. We take our job seriously, and we work hard on the projects, the products, the relationships with the population, the consumers, on infant nutrition. That's very important, because that's where it all starts. That's where it begins. We take this as recognition, and we're delighted. It's more like a tool to motivate us. We take it that way. Now, competitive position in this market, well, there's a lot of factors involved. And I think the most important is to have trust and confidence, that type of relationship with your consumers. That's where we're focusing our efforts. that firstly means that the product has to meet expectations and meet our promise, what we're promising. It also addresses this dimension of continuity in time, of sustainability, and we try to be that. We've been so long here in France that we try, and I think we are achieving and succeeding. It's all R&D, it's innovation. It's that link with society in the broader sense of the term. And there, that charter is just a part of that. It's a link with France itself, with our promises and the French population. That's the way I see it. It's motivating, we carry on doing it, and we're proud of what we do. Now, the word strive, yes. Okay, Jim, as he said, Jim said, the world is a world where the last time we saw you, it was for the results. It was the H1 results, but things have changed since then. We just simply have a good sense of reality. We say we continue to deliver on the Nestlé model. We also said that we're going to be slightly outperform that 5-6% growth, and naturally that rests on improvement of margins. We're going for it, but we're in a context, in a reality that changes. We're not above reality, we're a part of reality. We were just trying to transmit that simple dimension, a sense of reality and humility, by saying that we live in a world and we're going to be closely watching what happens, but we have confidence in the future.
Cécile Lecoz, hebdomadaire Investir.
Cécile Lecoz from Investir. You have talked a lot about nutrition and health in your presentation. In the figures that were published this morning, we had the impression that the categories of products that are growing most rapidly are the categories that are not necessarily linked to health. You've mentioned chocolate, the juicy sauces in North America, snacks and pizzas are growing very quickly, unlike other categories. Don't you think it's contradictory? It's not contradictory. There are two dimensions I want to talk about. First of all, how do you define nutrition and health? We've used three words for this as well. Good nutrition is something that people like. And it's up to us to translate this like or enjoy into arguments that they can like what they eat, but with nutritional arguments. So if we can tell you, let's take the example of pizza. It's a dimension that allows you to combine a lot of nutrients into one product. You know the pyramid. It's combining nutrients that's important. It's up to us to put less fat, less salt, and less so on. And that's where iSense comes into play, our know-how. Is to be able to, for you to eat something. Even in France, pizza works really well. There's a really enthusiasm for pizza, which is more than 90%. So we can tell people not to eat pizza, no, eat this or that. But it's a lot easier to translate these pizzas that everybody like into a healthy food for a daily diet. It's up to us to combine this. So we've said choice. So taking a little bit of chocolate that's made with love, it's good. You shouldn't eat the whole box. Education is important for this. You have to make people aware that they are the main factor of priority to their health. And that's linked with the education dimension. To create this understanding, and we can do it at the company, and we do this in a very transparent way. We do it with the players in society, with the government. This is a much more honest dimension for a company to talk this way, rather than say, because we want to be in nutrition, health, and wellness, we only want to take the products that are linked to these dimensions. Of course, it's not easy. We are being criticized. You're talking about health, and you have chocolate. So health and chocolate. Well, chocolate is going to be here anyway, so it's best that it comes from us and to see how we can give you this chocolate dimension in your life and to portion it so that you can take small bites and make it enjoyable for you because it has so much taste. You can have just a little bit. And that's our responsibility in having this whole range of products to have a healthy life and a balanced life in terms of nutrition as well. You're saying that we talk about growth, but not in terms of nutrition, but child nutrition, for instance, has a double-digit growth. Nestle Health has a growth of almost 10%. So we have this in our dimensions. Milk with additional nutrients. Everything that's 60-40 plus is important for the company. And that's also where we have future value. Jenny Craig, for instance, that we just introduced in France. In the US, it's a bit difficult. But here in France, we just launched it, and it has huge growth. And those are the dimensions that are those for the future and that are seeing above average growth. I'm from Reuters. We haven't talked a lot about raw materials today. Maybe it's because the situation is not as tense on this front. Can you tell us your expectations on the cost of raw materials for the end of the year and for next year? It's true that we tend to forget raw materials. They has been quite a strong growth in the past 2-3 years ago, and then there's a relaxation, and then they went up again. So there's it has relaxed a little bit, but it's still quite high. We think that the trend is there. It's in line with the conviction that 80% of world population eats better and more, which is good. We can't just tell people not to eat. So it's good. It's the world that is growing, and 80% of the population lives in emerging countries, and emerging countries are growing, so it creates demand. So demand is growing. If you combine this with the number of factors, the agricultural policies, the agricultural business that were not really motivated, and that makes raw material costs go up. Volatility lives out of this. But this trend is quite positive because it motivates, it encourages farming. So volatility is difficult for us. So it's up to us as companies to look at the trends, the underlying trends, to see under this stress what the trend is going to be. I think the costs are going to remain quite high. It's up to us not to only use the pricing to balance this. We explained this a year ago, how we will have a number of actions to try and neutralize this impact as much as possible. But it's clear that the high cost, high prices of food and getting quite high and maybe becoming more balanced in a way. Karine Lachner from Le Figaro. I wanted to come back to the situation in the U.S. Mentioned that most of your categories were decreasing in North America, and I wondered how you were going to face this slowdown. And then two questions for France. You mentioned a savings program here. There's the increase in raw material costs. So how will this translate? and precision on this fluid that is going to be stopped at the end of the year. How do you interpret this failure? Does it mean that the French market wasn't ready for this kind of product? The U.S., indeed, it's clear that we've talked about the U.S. in terms of economic atmosphere. It's not very positive. It's a country that entered the crisis really quick, and we usually think that they're going to pick up really quickly. And this time, it's more difficult. And some categories are more impacted than others. And we are in the categories that are a little impacted because food, nutrition in general, are quite constant. It's the market share that counts. We see this in pet care and pet food. We are winning market shares, even though it's not huge. In the frozen foods and lean cuisine, they've rallied a little bit. And it was more targeted for women, and women last year rather focused their expenses on themselves and their families. But this has rallied, and we're thinking that this is going to rally as well. So market share is what's important. In ice creams, we've managed to earn market share. In pizzas, we've increased our market share, even though the category suffered a little bit, because our competitors have also suffered from the situation. So what's important is to re-inspire the category. It is going to rally more slowly than we could expect, but it's a very big market for us with dynamics that we like, and we want to make it work. In France, the economic program, I'm going to hand over to Laurent, maybe to Roland here as well. But the economic program, we want to condition ourselves not to go towards a big restructuring, big change that changes the atmosphere. We are trying to be regular and constant in our business, in our efficiency, and so on. It's not a project, it's a philosophy to organize ourselves that is continuous excellence. It's a framework to give each one of the 17,000 employees in France the enthusiasm of being efficient, of being part of a company going towards the same target. And that's our program, looking for efficiency rather than reducing costs and sending people here and there. It's this continuity, which is why growth is a very efficient dimension. And make this growth something, doing things more efficiently, but maybe Laurent can add a few things on this. And then this fluid, it's a failure, but it's a success. A product such as Nest Fluid, a lot of concepts that may be too difficult to understand, maybe this or that. It has to do with innovation and renovation. It's a risk we take when you innovate. It's a risk you take when you explore uncharted territories. You learn a lot. And I think we could have stayed another year, but we said, no, the relationship with the consumer is not ready yet. I think it's an excellent product. There are a lot of arguments in favor of it, but you need to trigger enthusiasm, or it doesn't work. And Nest Fluid is part of an innovation landscape that is very successful in France, which is why I'm saying it's a success, because it proves that a company such as Nestlé is daring. Those are calculated risks, and all calculations do not always succeed. And then you also take the measure of the decision and its consequences, and it's been done. So I'd rather apologize to the people who love the product. I'd like to tell them that there aren't enough of you to allow us to keep marketing it now. This is how I see it. So, Paul.
Indeed, we have a program of operational excellency worldwide. It's called Nestlé Continuous Excellence, and we roll this out here in France. Now, why do we do this? Well, we don't do it to improve margins in the short term, but rather to generate room for maneuver and efficiencies that enable us to invest in our innovation programs and our brands, and through that innovation, generate growth, market share, and put into place that virtuous circle that enables us to continue to contribute to the Nestlé growth model. We're focused on efficiency to be able to invest and to work on innovation, invest in the brands, and put into place that virtuous circle of profitable growth. It's quite as simple as that. So really what we're doing is investing here in via efficiency rather than restructuring or cutting costs. Yeah. Yes. Hello, Patrick. Daniel, Usine Nouvelle magazine. You announced several bits of CapEx in Asia. You've increased CapEx this year. You made two acquisitions in China also. Does that mean you weren't sufficiently well-developed in Asia and that you're going to be strengthening up there? Tell us a bit about that. Secondly, you've been cited as being potential acquirers of one branch of Pfizer. Can you confirm or deny your interest in that particular company? Well, Pfizer, first of all, that's pure speculation. We can't answer that type of question. It's pure speculation. Now, Asia. We've been a long time in Asia. 100 years in the Philippines already. And many other regions in Asia where we're present. But Asia has new dynamics now, which really does invite and incite us. It's not that we want to go there. It's rather to make the structures that are already there bigger and better aligned on that new potential. You mentioned two dimensions in China. Well, in China, we'd already been 100 years in China. Then we left, then we came back 25 years ago. We've got 25 factories in China, more than, in fact. So growth is very positive in China, and it does invite us to do something there. And those two acquisitions that haven't been materialized yet, they still have to be approved by regulatory authorities, they're just an expression of trust and confidence in the region. If China, with 1.3 billion inhabitants and very significant growth, and which is projecting itself into the future with massive growth, and India, 1.3 billion as well. And we're forgetting about Indochina, Indonesia, Vietnam. Add in all of those dimensions where we have been for many years. Well, that's where we see growth. And that type of growth is linked to volumes, because that's really where we have demographic growth as well and volumetric growth. And we're investing in capacity, but also in know-how and expertise. We're investing in our personnel in Asia. We've invested a lot in people in Asia and in R&D. So once again, these are not short-term investments. They are long-term investments to continue to resist in that dimension, in that part of the world, which is so promising and which is linked to additional complementary dimensions like product innovation, connection with the consumer and consumer loyalty. And in Latin America, it's exactly the same story. One last question, maybe? The gentleman on my right. Jonathan Douay, France Snacking Magazine. we saw in the figures published this morning that snacking has been a big growth driver in the United States. For France, is that considered as being a strategic direction? And if so, yes. In 2012, then, what are the market segments or the brands that you're going to be promoting in that light? Well, I would say that sweet and savory snacking, well, savory snacking especially, is a huge growth opportunity. And snacking can become more or less savory, let's say. People like snacking. They like pizzas. So it's up to us to find ways to give them that experience in a healthy manner with the right nutrients, be it dairy, cereals, vegetables, meat, etc. We can put it all together and do it in a way with less salt and less whatever else. That's where R&D is so vital, because it's up to us to give those answers, to deliver those answers, and not to say to the customer, no more pizzas because there's salt in it. No, we'll get the salt out of the pizzas. That's the heart of the issue of what we call 60-40 plus. And it's important in the United States and in France, too. So as you can see, that papillote issue, there we're giving taste, a healthy taste with less salt. And when you cook it in this papillote form, you need a lot less fat to cook it, to cook your chicken. That's the juicy chicken. So it's not just chicken as such. It's the way that you cook it that can make it more healthy. And that linked together with understanding and education and communication, of course, I think that's the real challenge for the population in general. To have a more healthy diet. That's our promise. And that affects all categories of products that we have, like I said earlier on. Sylvie Boulanger, LSA. Can you innovate in waters? Because we didn't talk a lot about waters. Maybe it's more difficult on that segment. What's the news in Nestlé waters then? Or water is fascinating because it's so simple. So cultivating simplicity is a beautiful thing, and that's what we do with water. Maybe John might want to mention something about that, but water isn't just water, it's water. And we see this with Vittel here in France, Perrier. In France and around the whole world, San Pellegrino, they all have a personality, these brands. They all have their arguments. They all have their mineral composition. They all have dynamics that make these international brands, and they have growth that's very motivating too, practically double digit. And that's why, and at Nestlé Waters around the world, we have started moving towards this water culture. Water isn't just water, it's water. That's our slogan. And people react differently to that. If we say water is H2O, yes, but that's not the case. It's a fascinating world. It has the useful dimension that you link water with survival. Yes, of course, water is life. And that's what we're in. But there's another dimension, which is this culture of simplicity that I love it. We do water tasting sessions in different glasses, for example. That's another new experience. How do you combine that with food and water together? And we're getting very positive feedback from those initiatives. John Revill, Dow Jones.
Okay. First of all, moving forward, you say consumer confidence is probably going to be low. So I just wondered, how do you think you're going to get the... how much harder is it going to be to get the price increases that you want in this environment? Obviously, you've mentioned innovation, but do you think that's going to be harder? And secondly, how do you think the position of the company is overall, moving to what a lot of analysts think is going to be a downturn? Do you think you're better in a better position now than you were in 2008?
I didn't understand that. Why are we in a better position now than in 2008 to face the downturn?
Confidence is low, is lower. How do you see it in price increases? I think part of them are played, but we are not in the pricing business, we are in the value business. Again, I would give a response there in saying it is for us to see that we fill the price with value. And that's why we said also when you have raw material price increases, just to translate them back to back in your price, and that's your whole story, is not a bad, is not a very good thing. And that's why I really believe in innovation, renovation, and bringing new concepts and new values into it. And also it's a fact that we have to reduce the impact of price increases, raw material price increases, by our efficiencies, by et cetera, et cetera. So confidence is low, but we are looking for bringing the consumer these moments of joy and enjoyment that actually that we dislink our success, our link with the consumer from their confidence. The other, how we see the downturn, how we see are we prepared for? I think the answer lays in my first answer too. It is how we actually see these opportunities. First of all, consumer confidence is low. That's not the world. That's our world maybe here. That's the world where we have these economic crises based on debt. But if you go to the developing world, where people are seeing a better tomorrow for their children, where people are seeing that they can develop and have a new quality of life, when you see how they believe in the future and work for them for it, it's very motivating to see. And then you would say confidence is low, is not really defining the world. It's defining an important part of the world where we have then specific answers, but we are a company that is worldwide, and that's the nicety about the thing, that we can charge batteries and be motivated together with motivated people and being part of the solution where there is less confidence. And that's how we operate. We are a very locally engaged company responding to all these different impulses. Oh, I said it in English. Sorry. Well, not sorry.
Yeah.
Bonjour.
Hello, Christine Lapasserelio, Wall Street Journal. Seems to me that you're not very present in organic foods. What is your point of view on organic foods? Do you think there are categories of products in particular there that could be legitimate? Well, perhaps we don't talk about it enough, but we are in organic foods. That's a fact. Organic foods is small in the whole food world. We're present in the food industry, yeah. And maybe we're proportionately involved in organic foods. That's why you have the impression we're not in organic foods. But if we were only in organic foods, we'd be, of course, more visible. But in infant nutrition, that's very organic. There's a lot of organic in there. That's what the consumer wants. That's what they expect. And that's what conditions the quality of the foods. Now, we're committed with the consumer to... And you have to be realistic there, because if you see organic food and see what resources are needed to get organic food, well, there you've got to be realistic too. Because sometimes we always say this, it sounds nice, but you've got to be honest with people too. It would be nice to eat pure organic food or eat 10% of organic food. It's easy to say that, but we know that if we want organic food, 10 or 15% of organic food in our diets... Here in France, we would need five times the land mass of France. There's also other organic dimensions that we have to control, too, and check, because on some organic products, there's a lot of romanticism, but not enough reality. So we base ourselves on facts that motivate us as a company. We're committed to organic in proportions that are important for the consumer, but we're not... just going to become pure organic, you know? Because it's a reality that's not exactly feasible, and we want to be honest in the long term. Puget, LSA magazine. You've got Nespresso specialty. You mentioned the Cahier chocolates. It's always this direct relationship, direct marketing. Is that a deliberate strategy to get bigger in direct marketing and to circumvent supermarkets and restaurants? No, not at all. Absolutely not at all. That would be very pretentious of us, very pretentious, to say we're going to be clever, because they're our partners. We've been with them for decades, and we've got a lot of work to do with those partners. We've got to have constructive relationships. There's still tension, yes. It's logical in this kind of relationship. But as an industry, they, the retail industry, and companies like Nestle, industrial manufacturers, have to make nutrition interesting for the population. There's the real challenge. Let's be honest. In nutrition here in Europe, it's 10 to 15%, I think, of a family's budget. That's not a great deal. But healthy food every day, quality food every day, that makes affordable quality and affordable lifestyle. That's really how we should put food and nutrition into perspective. Family meals, having a good time around a good meal. That's quality of life. And European society has forgotten about that. They need to redefine here in Europe what it is to be happy. What is happiness? Is it holidays in exotic locations, or is it 365 days a year having a good time with your family around a delicious? It's clear that there are other channels opening up with new technologies too. E-commerce, we need to explore it. We need to see it. And the Nespresso relationship has been built right from the beginning, because you also need to know that supermarkets weren't open to that concept, so we created that direct link with the consumer. It was constructive. These are always additional dimensions to the other dimension. So us as a company, when we talk about Nestlé Professional, that's a channel that covers restaurants, hospitals, and ultimately reaches the consumer by that route. That's a part of our reality. And it's new for a company like us to see that. What about Jenny Gray? There's a concept of giving products, creating a menu for somebody that is trying to lose weight, and to link that to a professional person who can support you and guide you in that. That's a real challenge. And it brings that notion of discipline into the diet, and it has a positive effect. Sure, you need efficacy, but we have long-term additional dimensions here, which are over and above the biggest dimension, which is to think about our partners in the retail industry. If there are no further questions, then I will adjourn this meeting. We are therefore closing this conference. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I now invite you to join us to a cocktail in the adjacent room.